Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, December 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we push through the middle of the week here. So nice, we'll do it twice this week with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Outline. He'll join us to open up today's show. We'll take a general look overall at the bowl season, take a look at a few more NFL games here in Week 15, and also give you some thoughts on tonight's trio of NHL games. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds from VSiN will join me at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. We'll talk some bowl season with him, talk a little bit of NFL with the sides that are on his radar for this week, then also take a look at the Big Ten in college basketball and how that conference has gotten a start here to this 2019-20 season. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff. Talented cast of writers churning out a lot of good material here for you. Very busy time of year, as we know. So tons of things to keep an eye on. Our staff doing that for you over at the website. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today, and we start with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Another day, Adam. I'm telling you, we're rolling along. It's terrifying. Week 15 of the NFL, really getting our ducks in a row for bowl season and hockey and hoops. And the President's Cup gets going today.
Yeah, definitely a lot of stuff going on. And second segment here with you this week. I forgot that Brian Leonard had a previous engagement here this morning, so called on Brian real late, Brian Blessing, that is, real late here to hop on the show, save me for this first segment. So, Brian, definitely very much appreciate that. And, you know, like you said, I mean, it's a very, very busy time of year, to say the least. So everyone's excited about the bowl games. Everyone's excited about kind of starting to break down these matchups a little bit. But with so much other stuff going on a daily basis, it can be a little bit difficult to really dig into the nuts and bolts of these games early in the process.
And so much will change before some of these games are played. I mean, you get a handful of games going here in 3 days or whatever. But you got to look at the motivation of certain teams. Like one to me, Memphis and Penn State. I'm wondering about Penn State. In terms of, are they doing a cartwheel to play? I mean, not knocking the Cotton Bowl, I guess to a degree I am, but, you know, they were basically penciled in to the Rose Bowl, and all of a sudden Wisconsin has a great first half against Ohio State, and everybody's yapping away during the game. Oh, you know, Wisconsin's got to go to the Rose Bowl, and, you know, Wisconsin goes to the Rose Bowl. And, you know, based on their schedule, I think, you know, a legitimate case, you know, can be made that Wisconsin deserved to go there, but for all intents and purposes, Penn State thought they were going there. Now, are they all jacked up to, you know, play Memphis in the Cotton Bowl? So if they're not that motivated, and we don't know, you know, what their mindset will be, and if that lack of motivation intensity shows up, it generally doesn't show up on the defensive side of the football. I probably would have liked that game to go over the total to begin with, and now if there's even a modicum of, they don't want to be there. I really like the over, the Penn State and Memphis game in the Cotton Bowl, the total 60.5. But they got to watch the weather. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Boy, when you're betting these things 3 weeks out, you know, some of these places, you better be careful. Check the weather.
Yeah, that's definitely important. And the weird thing about that game for Memphis, their head coach Mike Norvell getting hired at Florida State, wanted to coach the bowl game, but because of the recruiting calendar and stuff like that, not able to do it. So Memphis going to run an interim head coach out there. And that's a thing too. You know, some of these coaches get hired. You've got Eli Drinkwitz from Appalachian State gets hired at Missouri. He won't coach the bowl game there against UAB. You've got, you know, an interim for Boston College where they fired Steve Adazio already. So you have these coaching questions. Speaking of Boston College, running back AJ Dillon already said, yeah, I'm not playing the bowl game. I'm just going to go ahead and focus on the NFL draft. Jordan Love from Utah State, that's one of the early bowl games. He is going to the draft. There was some question as to whether or not he would transfer, play his senior year somewhere else. But this is his last showcase in a college football game unless he plays Well, yes, it is his last showcase. He can't play the Senior Bowl. So his last opportunity to go out there, put up some numbers for the scouts. So all of these different things kind of fuel into that whole motivation angle on an individual level, on a team level. And with the first round of bowl games in 9 days here, a lot could change before those, let alone the ones that are, you know, 3 weeks out.
No, there's just all these things that you got to take into account. The motivation, and you brought up the great point now. Now, McCaffrey started this whole thing, right? And when he said, I'm not playing in the bowl game. And boy, he took a lot of heat for that. But I'll tell you one thing. I don't blame any of these guys, especially after you saw the injury the Jalen Smith kid suffered, the Cowboys linebacker. And honestly, thankfully for that guy. But it took 2 years. He could have dropped like a rock. I mean, he could have gone undrafted. The Cowboys took a chance on him. But he had nerve damage in his leg. It already cost him millions, but it could have cost him everything.
Yeah, I mean, look at Tua. You know, I mean, look at the situation there at Alabama where, I mean, that's a game that he shouldn't have still been playing, you know, so anything can happen here in these situations, to be sure. And again, not to say that a guy like A.J. Dillon, he was a first-round pick or anything like that, but some of these guys, you know, if you're not in the semifinal or in a marquee bowl game, you can't hold it against. You can't hold it against them no matter what, but you know, certainly those are decisions that these players have to make. And, you know, hey, I mean, for me, you know, you've got a short shelf life. And in particular, a guy like Dillon being a running back, you got a very short shelf life in the NFL. There's no reason to jeopardize any part of the money you can make, your draft position, anything like that. So we will get more of these announcements as we go forward. Some of them may move the line. Some of them may not. But it is tough to jump into this pool so early on when you don't know how deep the water is.
No, I mean, the ones, obviously, the final four, we know what's shaking there in a real level of motivation from both of these teams. Well, yeah, I can imagine this. I mean, you mentioned Tua. I mean, what's Alabama thinking? You know, this Alabama playing Michigan, I mean, big deal. I mean, honestly, it's crazy to think that, but that's probably how Alabama thinks. And who travels? And the other thing is, you got to think about who travels. Who, you know, we just saw it in the NFL. We did it on the podcast last week. Said, man, look out. You know, Pittsburgh was walking into a buzzsaw. Arizona had been embarrassed. And it is a team that had been competing. And listen, let's cut to the chase. Pittsburgh flawed offensively going on the road. That was just a trapdoor spot for them and a look-ahead spot to a Sunday night flex game against the team they were chasing. But then all of a sudden, you know, you see the final possession where Arizona's got a chance to go down and win the football game. And they're like in their own barn and they can't hear the snap count because it was all Steelers fans.
Yeah, that's a big thing too here. And, you know, I've kind of given out a point here, a point there for, you know, home field advantage, whether it's going to be a crowd edge, a familiarity edge, something like that in my power ratings here for the bowl season. So again, the nice thing is we've got a lot of time before these things actually get going. At the same time, you mentioned at the top of the show here, we're already in week 15 of the NFL season. Time flies in this business. So these bowl games are going to be right on top of us here very, very soon. So again, you may be handicapping the NHL, the NBA, college basketball, the NFL, you know, whatever other niche markets you want to handicap. Don't forget, for our listeners out there, take some time every day, every couple days, something like that, to really start digging into some of these bowl games. Try to find some opportunities that you like, some situations that you think could wind up playing in your favor a little bit. Brian, anything else you want to mention about the Bulls before we move over to the other gridiron in the NFL?
Honestly, I'm with you. There's a lot to dissect. In it's weird because it's almost like the week one NFL numbers that those will be up in what? You know, July, June or July. And those numbers just sit there. But keep an eye on things because a lot of those games, the numbers will run. And it's just trying to stay in front of it and the information. But if you see something starting to run, you know, react. You know, bet it because it looks like it's trending up. Or if you're actually not on board with the move, then hang in there and wait and get the best of the number you possibly can. But just I would say this every day. You're on to other things. I would just keep tabs on the lines and see if things start to move. And clearly, you know, the days leading right up to the game, you know, those moves are going to become more significant. But you may get some thought process just by it's out of sight, out of mind. But check the bowl numbers all every day and see, and then do a quick check. Why is that moving? What all of a sudden prompted that? And maybe the line number will prompt you to find out a piece of information that came out and still get the best of the number.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's so easy with so much going on. And of course, people prepping for the holidays, maybe you know, you got some holiday travel coming up, something like that. Very easy to miss these bits of news, these little tidbits and nuggets that come out about guys sitting out. You know, and it's not even just skill position guys. You know, sometimes you get a left tackle or, you know, a projected first round right tackle, something like that, a defensive player, you know, a top cover corner, something like that. Sometimes those guys may sit out the bowl game too, to where they're not going to affect the number, but they're going to affect the handicap. If you've got a team that runs the ball, you know, 60% of the time, 60% of their yards coming on the ground, maybe that's something you've got to factor into your handicap if a lineman's sitting out. Or a team has trouble protecting the quarterback and their best offensive lineman's not going to play. That team's probably going to face some third and long situations, stuff like that. So,
well, it's not like an under. Yeah, and it's not like the, you know, the NFL where you get the weekly injury report. And it, oh, yeah, this guy, he's sitting out practice Wednesday, and they'll know more on Thursday. And you actually get a kind of a status update on a guy. You know, college football, all of a sudden, you know, some guy gets a high ankle sprain in practice, you know, and the game's 3 weeks away. The hard part is getting the information.
Yeah, definitely. And it's very easy to get information in the NFL. And we go over to the NFL here now for game 307-308 on the board, Philadelphia and Washington. And once again, the Eagles just ravaged by injuries at the skill positions. Not a great look on Monday Night Football for them. Kudos to them for the comeback, winning that game in overtime. But once again, the Eagles just not really living up to their ceiling. Injuries playing a big role, but there are some other things kind of at play here. But this is an interesting line to me here for Sunday, with Philadelphia only a 4.5-point favorite against Washington. Redskins, an outright win over Carolina a couple weeks ago. Relatively easy cover last week against Green Bay. Had the win over the Jets 3 weeks ago. What do you think about this? I mean, is this just a complete stay-away game in the NFC East for you?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, for 5 weeks we've been, you know, talking about Philly Dallas, and it's going to come down to that game, and finally we're about to get to it. But the Eagles almost squandered that whole thing on Monday night, and they dug down deep. The problem is Philly's a mash unit from the skill position. I mean, you know, to get the Boston Scott kid come in kind of saved their bacon. They were introducing each other in the huddle, the wide receivers. You know, Wentz showed some heart and some grit. And honestly, the Redskins have been playing hard. And every one of these games matters to them in terms of getting Haskins some development. They've been playing hard. You know, the Philly thing, they just don't look right. Dallas just doesn't look right. It's a low number for a team who, you know, just desperately has to win the game. I would probably step up to the plate and say Philly summon something up here. I'm a believer in the coaching staff with the Eagles. It's a low number, and the money's come on in on the home dog. I just got to believe at this time of year, there is still so much on the line. You have a chance to start your season all over again. And my God, Adam, I mean, as bad as it's been, you have a legitimate chance to host a playoff game. I mean, it's not like, oh, yeah, they're going to get in and they can do nothing. You know, crazier things. I mean, I honestly believe, my thing this week is I'm talking about Minnesota. I'm like, watch out for Minnesota. They're off the pace. They're just flying under the radar. They're in there. All of a sudden, Thielen comes back. That running game, and then you spread out their skill set. I think Minnesota, even as a wild card, can make a run. But the division is still in play for them. But if you look at it today, they're just another team. Minnesota, you know, you got to be able to look down the road. I think Minnesota is absolutely worth the future bet. I really do.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, as far as this game goes, I think it's tough because, you know, Washington got their couple of wins. And now you kind of look at this, you know, as the Redskins front office, and you say, okay, well, Now we've got three of these things, and it's great. You know, it's cool. I'm glad that we're, you know, playing well with Haskins, and maybe we're finding out that this kid, you know, could have an NFL future with a little bit more seasoning, a little bit more development. At the same time, you want to play just well enough to lose competitively. Whereas for Philadelphia, as you mentioned, they've got a lot at stake here. They've got a lot on the line that they really need to be focused on, even with that look-ahead spot to Dallas, which, again, they could render kind of null and void if they wind up playing pretty poorly here this weekend. It's a tough handicap because, again, you've got a Washington team that is kind of rallying around the interim and Bill Callahan, a Philadelphia team badly underperforming expectations. They're only 4-9 against the spread. Not the type of team you want to lay numbers with at this point in time. And it's tough because you want to try to find something to like on this weekend's NFL card. And this looks attractive, but maybe looks are deceiving here.
Well, and the other thing, again, the motivation thing, it sure seems like Washington's they're playing for the kid. And they're playing hard for him. And he's learning on the job. And honestly, if you weren't going to start the season with him, whatever, however that all panned out. But this is really about building towards, you know, not having next season be a train wreck too. So they actually are playing very hard. The thing I would put stock in is I think they lose guys. That poor kid is snake bit. That's ridiculous. So it's going to be Adrian Peterson, and Peterson has its moments. But I think in a one-game deal, albeit they had a couple of crazy breakdowns against Eli where Slayton got behind them, the Eagles defense then shut the Giants down. And I think Schwartz is the kind of guy, you give him 5 weeks worth of tape on Haskins, Schwartz as a defensive coordinator, I think, is going to be able to take something away, a lot away from Haskins. And then it literally comes to, you know, just be smart. And on top of it, I mean, you don't want to go into that Dallas game limping in either. You know, at some point you got to go in, okay, we figured it out. And you're building to a crescendo for the big game. I mean, we can sit there, you can spin it anyways. Oh, it's a look ahead spot. Oh, I think this is about, yeah, let's get a win, but let's start playing some good football because let's cut to the chase here. The time is now.
Well, speaking of teams looking to play some good football, the next game on the board by rotation numbers, game 309-310, the Bears and the Packers. And looks like we're kind of setting up with a little bit of a sharp versus public split here in this game. This line has come down off of 5 into the 4.5 and down into the 4 range. The public probably going to back Green Bay when all is said and done here, following up with Aaron Rodgers. But the Bears are starting to play a little bit better. The narrative about Mitch Trubisky is kind of changing a little bit. 3 straight wins for them, 4 of their last 5. Now, they are just 1-3 against the spread in their last 4 games, but you know, they're playing pretty well. Green Bay has been viewed as a flawed team by most of the sharper handicappers out there in the NFL. Looks like they're going to try to go against them here this week. What do you think about this one at Lambeau, Brian?
Well, all I know is in the opener, the game was 10-3. When you're thinking everybody's going to be all fired up, but everybody was fresh as a daisy and healthy, there's intensity. They don't like each other. They know each other. It's a great rivalry. I would start by thinking it's a lower scoring game. And then obviously the weather up at Lambeau, but this Green Bay team, I'll tell you what I would do. Green Bay's been one of these teams. They start fast. They're like, they remind me of remember the Florida State team with Jameis Winston, however many years ago that was, I don't know. What would it be now? About 6 years ago where Florida State would just they didn't get the memo what time the game would start. I mean, it was an ATM machine. You faded Florida State in the first half, and then they'd come roaring back and barely win the game. It was like fade them in the first half, play them in the second half, don't even watch the game. And it worked all year long. And the Packers are the same way. The Packers come out of the gate, they get a lead, and then I don't know if they take their foot off the pedal, and then they let teams hang around, and the other team comes back, and then it's kind of a coin flip at the end. From a motivation perspective, they're both motivated, but Green Bay, you know, they can lose this game and live to fight another day. Chicago's got to win out. So, you know, I'd be leaning Chicago in the under personally, and you're right, can Trubisky back it up? Because, boy, through the first 10 weeks, you know, this guy was just getting pitchforked but he's actually played some pretty good football of late.
Yeah, to your point about Green Bay, and I mentioned this on the show before, and I regret that I haven't updated it since, but this Green Bay team, 8.8 yards per play in the first quarter. They've scored 14 offensive touchdowns in the first quarter. Aaron Rodgers adjusted net yards per pass attempt in the first quarter, 11.1. Second quarter, 5.9 yards per play, only 8 offensive touchdowns. Third quarter, 6.54 yards per play, 8 offensive touchdowns. Fourth quarter, just under 6 yards per play, 7 offensive touchdowns, all of them passing.
And it's happened all year.
They have 6 rushing touchdowns in the first quarter. Rodgers' best quarter has been the first quarter. So basically, you've got a situation where Matt LaFleur can come up with a good game plan, but it seems like he does struggle to adjust as the game goes along.
So I don't know that it's a good game. You know, honestly, bud, I don't know that it's a good game plan. They've got a good scripted first drive, or you know, or whatever he's got. You know, out of the gate, those first couple of series, you know, it's working like a top. But then, you know, the other teams, like you said, they see what they're doing a little bit. And, I mean, I watched the Bills do this all the time. Team will go right down the field on them on the first drive. And you're like, ew. And that's it. And that's the end of it. They get one good look at a team and they make the adjustments they need and shut them down.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You've got 57 first downs and 165 plays in the first quarter for Green Bay. In the second quarter, 53 first downs on 230 plays. So this is a team that's been much more efficient with that scripted drive. You know, coaches generally script, 10 to 15 plays. I think it is commonly accepted to be the answer there. They do very well on those. After that, they don't do so well going forward. So maybe if you like Chicago in this game, and again, the Bears do look like the sharp side, maybe you see if Green Bay goes and scores that opening touchdown, gets those opening points, maybe you get Chicago, you know, 8.5, 9, something like that from a live betting standpoint, if not higher, go ahead and take them at that point because Green Bay not adjusting well throughout the game. Chicago's defense is good enough to start making those adjustments.
Well, and I would even say, and I said, don't absolutely do it. Watch the game, see how the game's being played. But just everything we just said, and, you know, we're trying to come up with this on the front end. But the other thing is, at least as you're watching all the games, kind of keep a closer watch on this game. And honestly, maybe the play, and I know it would be a homework assignment. We'd have to figure it out. But I would venture a guess, everything we just got done talking about, the under in the second half is probably not a bad play.
Yeah, I agree. And, of course, again, I mean, it's December. It's Lambeau Field. I think it goes without saying. You definitely want to make sure you check the weather forecast for that one. See if that one could affect not just the gameplay here, but, you know, keep in mind, too, that things can change very quickly with the weather in December. Make sure you're looking at an hourly forecast to see if maybe the second half could be bad. Maybe it starts bad, something like that. Very important for you to do here at this time of the year. Brian, one more game I want to ask you about here in the NFL. 3:29, 3:30, the Rams and Dallas. And this is the biggest mover of the week. Dallas opened as high as a field goal favorite at home, albeit at plus money. A lot of 2.5s out there. Now at several shops, the Rams a 1-point favorite heading down to Jerry World. Do you buy the hype here? I mean, is this a spot where the Rams just keep rolling right along?
I would say yes. And again, you know, these are some of the things we talk about. That number Sunday night, first thing Monday morning, I'm doing a couple of things. And I at the time, I think Dallas was still 2. And I know I said, I believe by the time this thing kicks off, the Rams will be favored. Because when you get a number that's 2 or 1.5, it's a dead zone. It's nowhere near the key number. And if it starts to trend one way, it can run. But it's not the biggest move in the world, although it looks like it. But everything was leading to the point that the Rams would probably end up being. And at this, here we are midweek, and it's 1. I mean, this thing may go up to 1.5, 2, that the Rams will be favored. The bottom line is the talent is there for Dallas, but it's just not meshing. And, you know, the pressure on Garrett and the Jerry Jones nonsense. But the bottom line is, the Cowboys sit here, it's all about the Eagles. You know, it's the same thing. Now, you know, we're sitting there saying with the Eagles, yeah, it's a look-ahead spot, but both of these teams want to try to find a way to start playing some good football. But the Rams have to win out. I mean, see, the Cowboys have the luxury. We can win the division. You know, as a seven-win team, we can win the division. You know, the Rams, they're climbing a hill here, and they're facing a gauntlet. But for whatever reason, it sure seems like they, after getting mauled by Baltimore, they stepped on Arizona, who's not horrific, and then a very impressive game against Seattle. I watched the Rams play calling to me, though. I got to tell you, Adam, is really bizarre. I mean, they throw and throw and throw and throw. They just refuse to run the football. And that will catch up with you at some point. But Goff's protecting the ball better, a little healthier. You know, you got Cooks back in the lineup. They're using Robert Woods a lot. But it's almost like they refuse to give Gurley the ball. But if they were saving for Gurley, there's nothing to save him for now, and he's starting to touch the ball a little bit more. So I'd be inclined to ride the wave with the Rams because they got to win out. You win this one, and all the eggs are in the Niners' basket the following week, and then they're sitting here looking for some help, but they're breathing.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, really, realistically, the reason that Jason Garrett still has a job is because he does pretty well within the division. You know, he's pretty good at playing those NFC East teams. In fact, when you look at him against the NFC East, 37-21 straight up, 31-27 against the spread. Overall, against the NFC since he took over in 2010, 65-57 straight up, 53-66-3 against the spread. So in terms of games against non-NFC East, NFC competition, which I know is a little bit confusing there, 22-39-3 against the spread. So teams that at least see him relatively often in the NFC, he struggles with outside of the division. That's one of those teams here in the Rams who, you know, they obviously have Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator. He knows a lot about this Cowboys personnel. And the spin cycle here for Jerry Jones with Jason Garrett trying to talk his way into keeping him, all this, all that. You know, it's a difficult type of situation for Dallas right now. But as you said, everything comes down to that game next week against Philadelphia. So they have a little bit of margin for error. Certainly they'd like to play well here in this one. And Philadelphia, of course, plays Washington this week. But you got road golf. And no one's really talking about that anymore because the Rams have turned everything around. Weather conditions not a problem in Arlington. I think it's a tough game, especially with the line value kind of extracted out of this one. I don't think it's anything I'm going to have interest in playing now.
No, and you know, and this is a goofy one, but there are little things that can make a difference for you. The Rams are basically sitting there, are big Chargers fans. They want the Chargers to beat Minnesota. I mean, that's pretty much the target that the Rams have. So the Vikings game actually starts 20 minutes before the Rams game kicks off. So if the Chargers ever got a 10-point lead or were up on Minnesota in game, you know, don't kid yourself. The Rams, their scoreboard watch it too. If they see the Vikings are down in that game, that's like you talk about all of a sudden an instant energy, a five-star energy drink on the bench. If they look at the scoreboard and see that the Vikes are trailing at the Chargers, it's going to impact them. They're going to get so fired up and say, we're right there. Come on, guys, let's go. We got to win this game.
Yeah, and again, that's part of it too. And, you know, that's an important thing for our listeners to keep in mind here as we go throughout the next few weeks is that, you know, some of these results in the early games can have a betting impact on some of the later games. So keep that in as part of the equation here as well. We transition over to the NHL for a few minutes real quickly here, Brian. And you and I were talking about the Blackhawks and Golden Knights game last night. Vegas, over a $2 favorite. They take care of business 5-1. But a good live betting opportunity presented itself in that game. We talk about the NBA. We talk about guys getting into foul trouble. That's not always it's not always showing up in the live odds for these games. Chicago found themselves in a really difficult spot last night, and Vegas really took it to them.
Well, okay, so if you're a $2 favorite and it's a scoreless game after one, that number is going to come down. Right. Okay. The Blackhawks are playing with them. Now, is the guy in charge of the live wagering watching this game and paying really close attention to it? It would be an example probably for a game that would be closer to a pick or $1.20. But in this particular instance, the Blackhawks lost a defenseman, I believe it was Gilbert, in the first period. Then all of a sudden, with about a minute to go in the first period, Calvin DeHaan got hurt. So and you're sitting there going, it's nothing after one. But first of all, you know, the Chicago defense, I mean, they're drinking Metamucil on the bench to begin with. And now you're down to four defensemen. I mean, what, losing a defenseman really screws up the rotation and adds minutes to everybody. And then you got to try to sort it out. Okay, you're with him now. But when you're down to four defensemen, you've got two pairs that are just constantly getting thrown right back out there. And the minute that happened, it's nothing. You go to the locker room. And if you're from afar, say, oh, well, the Blackhawks hanging with the Golden Knights, it's nothing after one. They had no shot. I mean, Vegas just, they knew it, and they tilted the ice on them. And then on top of it, they started cycling them and working the defense. And actually, it changed their style of play and just started working that defense. And the open ice down the middle in Chicago's own end the rest of the game, it was like a pond hockey game for Vegas. But it was because of a couple of in-game injuries that would have presented a great opportunity, you know, in-game wagering. But the price would have been, you know, it would have come down from the game number, but it would have still been exorbitant. But it literally was a stroke on the board.
Well, and again, paying attention to games, being able to find those opportunities, getting some of those live betting, you know, situations are very important. It can definitely help your bottom line. And again, you know, maybe that's easier to beat than a full game wagering market because you actually see what's going on and can get an idea of what's happening here in a lot of these games. So, Brian, only three games tonight on the NHL board. Let's see if we can get an idea of these. Boston, Washington, Ottawa, Montreal, Philadelphia, Colorado. Anything stand out on the card for you tonight?
It's a light card. You know, just again, with hockey betting, though, the situational things that present themselves. We always talk about that first game home from a long road trip. Washington goes on a four-game swing, wins every game, comes home. Balloon monster favorite against Columbus, and the Blue Jackets killed them. Plus, they were looking ahead to, you know, a great game. Boston, Washington, the Islanders, that you'd say clearly the top three teams in the East. So these teams are button heads. Boston's actually not playing that well right now. This is like really uncharted territory for them. They've lost three in a row. They actually went to Ottawa and got pitchforked. So I would probably be of the mindset Washington kind of gets their land legs back home after the trip and coming off a loss. I would probably, because I do think Washington's playing good. I just think they lost the game because of the situation. And honestly, they're only 25 cents at home. That's a pretty low number to be laying with the Caps. I think both teams show up. It's a great game. But current form, I'm much more willing to draw a line through the situational loss for Washington than the three games in a row that Boston's lost. And it's an 82-game grind. Boston's a terrific team. I'd lean to Washington, certainly. And the other two games, I think, are higher-scoring games. Ottawa-Montreal. Ottawa, good on these guys, man. It's a bunch of kids. You know, it's all about development, and it's a complete rebuild there. But, you know, this is a team. They are not a walkover. They've got, you know, the Tkachuk kid is a leader. You can build around a kid like that. The Pageau kid scoring, Shabbat. They're getting decent goaltending. I mean, clearly everybody thought Ottawa was going to be, you know, nothing to write home about. But they got 13 wins. They're four below 500. But they compete. And Montreal goes up and down the ice. They can score. You know, the mindset, the belief is, oh, Carey Price. Well, Carey Price is kind of, you know, he has a great Carey Price game. And then there are games where he's, you know, just so-so. Their last three games have been lower scoring. But I just think the way this game's played with these two teams, or maybe they're kind of a similar ilk, although Montreal's a lot further down the road. Montreal actually can contend to make for a playoff spot. I like it. I like the game to have tempo. I think it's a higher scoring game.
Well, we've heard a lot from Brian Blessing here this week on Bang the Book Radio. You can hear more over on our Bang the Book YouTube page as well. Some thoughts on the President's Cup, which gets underway today. Then some thoughts on three NFL games here for this weekend. And of course, you can always find Brian on Vegas Hockey Hotline and Sportsbook Radio. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Hey, real quick, just on the President's Cup, because when we talked yesterday, Adam, we did not know the first round matchups. But and we did do a video, just an overview, but we didn't have the pairings, the first round pairings. And the thing was the 26-hour travel that I think the Americans could really be walking into a buzzsaw here on the first day, think they'll get things sorted out, and they'll get better as the week goes on. But Gary Woodland and Dustin Johnson, great. These guys hit it a country mile. You know, but they're paired together, but they're going against Louis Oosthuizen and Abraham Answer. I like Oosthuizen and Answer in that match, and they're plus 15 cents. And that would be, there's five matches today. That's kind of the get out match. So just specific to the President's Cup, to add on to the video we did. I like Oosthuizen and Answer in that matchup today. Sportsbook Radio, Vegas Hockey Hotline, noon to 2, KSHP.com, noon to 2 Pacific time. And, of course, on Twitter, you follow me at Brian Blessing. And we've got three NFL videos and a President's Cup video with Bang the Book.
Always great to chat with you, Brian. Thanks again for bailing me out here this morning. I greatly appreciate it. Again, KSHP.com for Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
There you go. Once again, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, KSHP.com at Brian Blessing on Twitter. All right, we got one more guest, one more segment here for this Wednesday, December 11th edition of the show. That is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter, host on VSiN and contributor to the Point Spread Weekly newsletter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. Good to be with you. How are you, sir?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much for joining me here on the show. And you and I were talking a lot about the bowl season here before we came on air, and in part because of some breaking news right before our segment here that UNLV going to go with offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo from Oregon. And again, we talk about all the stuff that goes into bowl season here, head coaches, motivation, players sitting out. A lot of coordinators going to be changing teams too, and that can have a big impact on the bowl handicap.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point you make also on the coordinators as well taking over. I think there's a lot of unique angles, and that's always kind of been part of it in terms of the coaching changes, who's going to coach the bowl and who's not. I mean, right here in the Las Vegas Bowl, which is essentially the second day of bowl season on the 21st, we got a really unique angle with Washington and Boise State coming here. And that's a good matchup anyway. But one of the unique things with that game is that you have a resigning coach who's going to be coaching the bowl game in Chris Peterson. And now Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator, has been named the new coach. But like pretty much every other program in America, a lot of the time over December, whether you're in a bowl or not, is spent recruiting. So it's Jimmy Lake who is going out on the road for Washington and doing a lot of the recruiting, introducing himself as the head coach, reestablishing the relationship with the kids that might already be committed to Washington next year. Meanwhile, Chris Peterson's not on the road. He's game planning because he doesn't have to go recruit because he's not going to be the coach next year. So he's working on the game plan and pretty much in the office all the time, trying to dial some things up to beat Boise State. So you not only have that coaching thing, but you also have, and we've seen this kind of emerge and materialize over the last few years, you have some teams where players, especially if they're going to be first-round draft picks, who are probably going to sit out bowl games to protect potential draft stock. And I think what one team that falls into that this year, and obviously nothing's been announced, but Alabama, of course, has always been in the college football playoff. They've never not made the playoff. Well, this is the first year they're not going to make it, and they're playing in the Citrus Bowl against Michigan down in Orlando. Well, now there's some kids on the Alabama side that have a decision to make where it's all of a sudden, you know, do we go ahead and play? We know Tua is not going to play, but do we go ahead and play for this? Or if we know that we're first-round picks, are we maybe going to forego playing in those bowl games? So that's something you have to watch, and that's what makes it unique because some of these numbers you do want to bet on the openers, clearly, but you don't want to have too much exposure because stuff is going to change. Not only the coaching change angle that you mentioned, but the players sitting out. Also suspensions, it is over the holidays. You have finals week. Sometimes kids let a little bit of loose and blow off steam and end up getting themselves in trouble, whether they get in a bar fight or, you know, being somewhere where they're not supposed to be. So So you get those happen. You get suspensions. You may get some academic concerns with certain players. So a lot of things really go into this bowl season.
Well, and that's the decision, right? You know, because you sit there and for example, I played Central Michigan already plus 4.5. It's the only bowl bet that I've made so far. Happy to see that line coming down to 4 and 3.5. My power ratings is one of my biggest overlays of the bowl season. So I went ahead and grabbed that one. But overall, I mean, that's the question here. You know, I do have some other overlays. I do have some other positions I'm kind of interested in taking. I'm interested in Michigan in that Citrus Bowl. Do I take the 7 now, thinking that Alabama may have, you know, guys like Jerry Jeudy sit out or some of their other players, and that line maybe comes down to 6.5 or 6? Do I wait and see if maybe I can get a 7.5 out of that number? That's the hard part is market entry is so difficult to try and figure out for the bowl season, where you want to be able to get a number before it runs away from you. But at the same time, if what you expect to happen doesn't happen, you may be stuck there with a bet that maybe you don't like as much. So it's really hard to figure that out during the bowl season.
Yeah, right. And like one example, I think when the Peach Bowl line came out for Oklahoma LSU, now you knew that the line was going to go up on LSU because you obviously it was telegraphed in kind of the media, because it's like, oh, these top three, they have so much of a gap over everyone else. And that's not necessarily untrue. But so the people that took LSU, you probably had some people that wanted to get a position there just to get it on LSU on the low, knowing that they may be waiting, like I kind of am, to see some 14s perhaps pop on Oklahoma. So I mean, that's another way to also play this. And you also, like anything else, you want to be careful with some of the early line moves, because some of it is just either taking a position to maybe come back on the other side, do a little manipulation, or guys that are sharp that know where the lines are going to go, just taking a position. But that doesn't mean it's going to be like the true position when you get closer to game time.
Yeah, that's an excellent point too. You know, I mean, this is like week one of the NFL or week one of the college football season, where these lines are up for a long time. And you start with low limits, and limits gradually increase as you get closer to the game. If you can throw $1,000 or $2,000 on an early number to try and manipulate the market, as you mentioned, kind of massage that number to where you want, you can come back over the top for $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 as limits get bigger. You may be looking to sacrifice $2,000 to get that $7,000 bet in at the target number that you want. And that's what so much advanced time before these bowl games can do. And again, I'm just using very rough, very easy examples for our listeners to understand, but there is a lot of market manipulation that goes on out there too. And, you know, some of it may be speculation too, in terms of, you know, hey, maybe I kind of expect this team to not have everybody because some guys are going to sit out, or, hey, this coach is probably going to get hired, I'm going to get out in front of this one. It's an animal unto itself. It's very, very unique. And I think that a lot of people, you know, want to play all these bowl games, want to get caught up in the hype. You can get yourself caught up in losing a lot of money too, if you're not careful.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to consider, and we saw this too for college football, especially during the regular season with Circa and a couple others coming out with them so early on Sunday afternoon during the NFL games. A lot of the guys that are manipulating these numbers, they're not necessarily shooting for a record. They're shooting to make money. You know, these aren't guys that are necessarily, making their picks available for purchase, selling picks, or posting records on Twitter or whatnot. They're fine with going 1-1 on the game if they can make money on the game. It's like, yeah, I went 1-1. I took an early position to manipulate a better position on the other side. So I go 1-1, but I won money on the game. And that's what these professionals are trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. That's an excellent point. And again, something you want to watch for here during the bowl season. Keep an eye on that odds screen. Try to determine if a move is a legitimate position, or if it may be a little bit of a head fake, something like that. And again, you know, so many things to pay attention to in the news, players sitting out, coaches, coordinators, suspensions, as Wes mentioned, so on and so forth. We'll talk about all of this stuff as we hit all these bowl games over the course of the next few weeks here. But again, very important for you to start being on the lookout for these types of things early on here in the process. So with that, Wes, we transition over to the NFL side of things here. Take a look at some of the positions you're kind of interested in, And we start with this Thursday night game between the Jets and Baltimore. And this is one where I feel like it's dog or nothing, just given the spot for Baltimore, given that they're not going to get up for this opponent. Seems like you're kind of looking at this one the same way.
Yeah, and what I'm debating is if I have the stomach or the huevos or the cojones or whatever you want to call it to put this in the super contest entry or the Circa Million entry. I'm not sure that I do, but I'm looking to bet the Jets here just because I think that this could be one of those. And if you remember several weeks ago on a Thursday night game, it was Minnesota against Washington. And Minnesota, I think, was laying 17. They didn't cover the game, but they led throughout, pretty much controlled the game. But it was kind of like a let's get through it game. Let's not get anybody hurt. It's a short week game. We just played Sunday. Now we got to play on Thursday night. And I believe they had a couple big road games on deck at Dallas and Kansas City, which were really bigger road games at the time. So it was like, we've got bigger fish to fry in those games. And we don't want to necessarily sacrifice for, you know, really going all out here and just steamrolling the Redskins and then maybe sacrificing better efforts down the line. And I think you could see that with Baltimore here. Look, Baltimore is going to win is going to win this division. But they've got two divisional opponents. And I know that they're playing for home field in the AFC and all that stuff with the Patriots now having a third loss. So that does get inflated into the number here. And you've got a Baltimore team that has the Browns and the Steelers. I think they have a road game in Cleveland, which is kind of a revenge game because Cleveland went and handled them in Baltimore earlier in the season back in September. So they have that. And then, of course, you have your rival, the Steelers, coming in to close out the regular season. So you have Baltimore coming off that game against Buffalo. They had the game with New England recently. They had the game with the 49ers. So they played and then the game also at the Rams on Monday night where they steamrolled them. So they've had, like, a lot of big games before this. And now you've got the two divisional games to end the season. And then you've got a Jets team that's 5-8 that's going nowhere. But it's played, you know, has still been given an effort. They haven't been atrocious. They haven't been great. I know that they had to kick a bunch of field goals to barely beat Miami. But you look at this number, and you're getting over two touchdowns, 15 and even a 15.5 out there. I would be more apt to be on the Jets side because you got to think that the Jets are going to give an effort against a good team. And then you got to think a Baltimore team may have a little bit bigger fish to fry. And this is okay, let's keep it basic and let's just get in and get out with a win.
Yeah, I think this is one. I mean, I could almost call it like a quasi load management game for Baltimore. You know, I don't think Lamar Jackson's going to be running around. You know, we've seen him have 10 or more carries in a lot of his games. I don't think he's going to do that here. Mark Ingram on pace for about 225 carries himself. You know, that's something he did back in 2017 when he was a Pro Bowler. But last year, he only played 12 games, only had 138 carries. That's a guy that you want healthy for the playoffs. So maybe you see some more, you know, of the depth guys. Maybe you see a little bit more of a Justice Hill or something like that. You see Lamar Jackson making some business decisions, getting out of bounds when he does scramble, throwing it away when he gets the opportunity, you know, just trying not to take that level of abuse. And you can't fault Baltimore for that at all whatsoever. You know, I think the defense will play well. Like you said, they're going to try to get ahead and coast. Run the clock, take as much time as you want off the play clock, just not put anybody, you know, in a position for something bad to happen. And with a spread of this magnitude, that has a good chance of letting the Jets stay within the number.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of saw this, if you remember when Baltimore got priced really high when they beat Miami, I think, in the first week by like a billion points. Then they were laying close to around two touchdowns to Arizona, and Arizona hung within the number with a rookie quarterback in his first start on the road, and they were able to kind of hang in the number. So Baltimore, I think, there's this perception that they're just killing teams because people remember what they did to the Rams on Monday night a few weeks ago. So there's this perception, and I know that they beat Cincinnati, but Baltimore, I don't think they're exactly killing teams, especially at home. So, yeah, I like the Jets here. I think they can hang it in. It could be a low scoring game. It could be one of those 24-10 or 24-13 type of games where it's like, let's get in, let's get out, and then move on from there.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we're also talking about one of the most cerebral head coaches in the NFL in John Harbaugh. I mean, he knows this situation. He's fully aware here of, you know, what a game plan should look like for his team in this one. And you're right. It's probably not going to be to win by margin because you don't really need to. You know, it's just kind of survive in advance type of mode. So I agree with your thoughts here on this one. Again, obviously, for those that are in the Super Contest or the Circa Million that kind of follow along with this, that is the difficult thing. I think that the Jets are the right side here in this game. The thing is, do you take that chance with the Jets and also lock in your four other plays for the weekend? That's the real difficult decision here, I think.
Yeah, and we were talking before we started the segment that it's a little bit hard to find five games this week. This card is I think, fairly tough. So I think a lot of people are in the same boat where you're going to have to do a little bit of a guessing game in some regards, and maybe you got two or three that you like, and then you're going to have to just take shots and use ones that maybe you don't really like, but you kind of like, or you kind of lean to, and actually use them as plays.
All right. So we take a look here at one that, you know, we'll see what winds up on your card here for this week in the contest, but game 313-314, pretty marquee game here in the 1 o'clock time slot, Houston and Tennessee. Tennessee a 3-point favorite, but we certainly look to be moving down towards 2.5 here in this one. AFC South first place on the line in this game. Houston off of whatever the hell that was last week against Denver. Tennessee, big blowout win over Oakland. What do you think about this one here, Wes?
Yeah, and I was on Denver last week. That was one of my winners, not only in pocket, but in the various contests, because I just thought that that was an awful spot for Houston. And you've seen Denver in that role, in the exact same role at Minnesota, cover a big number and actually have a chance to win the game. This was the week. This was when Brandon Allen was still starting, and he was on his first road start. And they go in and jump out to a big lead at Minnesota, weren't able to hold on for the win, but were never in danger of not covering the number. And you saw it this past week with Drew Locke doing the same thing with Denver against Houston. Houston looked like they were primed to lay an egg last week, off the win over the Colts on Thursday night, and then off the win over the Patriots. So that's two primetime games that everybody watched. So when you get teams off consecutive primetime wins, they're going to be priced to the moon into the market, and they were last week. And then Houston really had to make it more cosmetically pleasing at the end, but Denver absolutely dominated. But now you go to Tennessee here, and this is actually, for contest purposes, a conflict between me and my partner, who kind of leans to Tennessee, and I kind of lean to Houston in the spot. But now you're starting to hear the buzz with Tennessee. They've kind of been under the radar and been getting ignored and have been winning games, and I thought last week was a good spot to actually fade them. It was 21-21 in the third quarter. Derek Carr takes a sack instead of throwing the ball away, takes him out of field goal range. They have to punt. Houston goes down and scores. And if you recall that game, it was 21-21. It was like 42-21 in the blink of an eye. It seemed like it happened in like 2 minutes, even though it didn't. But it sure seemed that way. And Tennessee gets the win at Oakland. Now Tennessee's getting the buzz. Now you're getting the national media talk about how good Ryan Tannehill has been, and he has been. And I predicted over the summer at some point Ryan Tannehill is going to be the starter of this team because I didn't believe in Marcus Mariota. And Tannehill's all of a sudden given this guy life. Well, now here comes all the national media. Now here they come to do a story in the pregame show chat fest features on Ryan Tannehill because Tennessee is right there in the mix for the playoffs, and they're hot right now, and they're 8-5. I still think Houston is the better team, and I think that they have established themselves as the best team in this division. They come off that awful effort. Well, sometimes that gets a team refocused, you know, after that putrid effort at home where you kind of needed to be brought back down to earth to get your sense of urgency back. So I do definitely lean to the Texans side here at 3.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's kind of the way I'm looking at this one. And Warren Sharp had a great tweet yesterday, said that since Ryan Tannehill took over, Tennessee averaging a point per minute of possession. That is the highest in the NFL by a large margin. So we are looking at an offense that's been much better with Tannehill, but also an offense that probably has some regression coming to it. Also, right. Tennessee here, you know, that win over the Chargers, you had the Chargers squander so many red zone opportunities because they just managed to find ways to lose, except for last week against Jacksonville. Buccaneers game, they had that game-winning fumble recovery touchdown, whistle blown by the refs, no idea what they saw. Tennessee escapes in that one. The game against Kansas City, you know, the Chiefs, I think they kind of rested on their laurels a little bit, getting Patrick Mahomes back. Defense didn't play well. They botched a couple different field goals in that game. 2 weeks ago, that game against the Colts that you mentioned, that's a 17-17 game. Halfway through the fourth quarter, Tennessee blocks a field goal, runs it back for a touchdown. That swings that game. Then that Raiders game last week tied in the second half as well. So the Titans are one of those teams where everything is just coming up aces in their favor. Now they get a very good Houston team, a Houston team off a bad performance. Maybe this one falls right around three. Maybe this one falls right around that key number. But I do think Houston is the side here. And thus far, Houston's been the sharper of the two sides here in terms of the betting action.
Yeah, and you mentioned that tweet. And I saw that tweet from Warren as well. And it's not just gamblers that I think follow Warren's little nuggets that he puts out there. It's mainstream media, because obviously when they're talking about these games on these national shows on the networks, they want to have analytical stuff like from Warren to make themselves feel smart. So they're going to use that Ryan Tannehill stat all week long. And I think, you know, I don't know if this is necessarily going to be pros versus Joes, but I think you're going to have, now that they've won a few in a row, you're going to have a lot more of the public. You kind of saw it last week, and maybe that was more betting against the Raiders, but you're going to see a lot more people, I think, willing to play Tennessee than were a few weeks ago.
Out of curiosity here, not a game that we're going to dive real deep into, but you know, last week, second to last game for the Raiders at home, I figured we'd get a big effort from them. To a degree, I guess we did, at least for 2.5 quarters, but you know, that game winds up looking pretty ugly when all is said and done, and Tennessee had almost 600 yards on them. Are you going back to the well with Oakland this week?
You know, I don't think that I am, because I think that last game in the black hole, that's priced into the line. But if I'm going to play it, it's going to be the Raiders, because I'm absolutely not taking the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you know that I like to take some stinky dogs at times when nobody else, when you got an animal that's unwanted, well, I'll go ahead and adopt and go ahead and take that animal. But not this time with Jacksonville. This is a team that no-showed three straight division games, and then no-showed against Tampa Bay, no-showed last week against the Chargers. I mean, it's kind of what we saw with Jacksonville last year, where it's like they got a little bit of adversity, and they got to that middle of the season, and they kind of packed it in. So that's not a team that I want. But I think Oakland, that last home game, is really priced into the line, so I'm probably staying away there.
All right, speaking of dogs then, game 327-328, Atlanta and San Francisco here. San Francisco, an 11-point favorite in this one, but you've got some interest in that, I guess we'll call it a contrarian dog.
Yeah, I do. And San Francisco, look, they got the big win on the road. Seattle lost, so now they're back in first place in the division, and in that, I believe – yeah, I think they'd be the number one seed right now. They were all of a sudden fifth last week. So now they're coming back home, and you got an Atlanta team that's shown a little bit of life. I think they're 3-2 their last five. They ended up being in a one score, even though they got behind on Thanksgiving. They ended up being in a one score game with New Orleans. They had that one against Tampa Bay where they were a home favorite, which was a good fade spot because they had won two straight as a road underdog. So now they come back as a home favorite. That's more often than not a good spot to fade, and Tampa Bay got them. But they steamrolled Carolina twice, and I know Carolina has fired their coach and they seem to be kind of circling the drain. But I think Atlanta, at least you're getting some effort out of these guys. I don't know if it's going to be enough to save Dan Quinn's job or if they want to for the season. Calvin Ridley's going to be out, but they have Julio Jones back, And they've had some injuries on the offensive line pretty much all year. That's been a real weak spot for the team. But, yeah, I think that this is a big number. And you also have the San Francisco 49ers in kind of that bigger fish to fry spot, because what do they have? They have two divisional games to close out the season. They have the Rams, who all of a sudden look like they've kind of had a bit of a resurgence where they're going to try to make a little bit of a late run into the playoffs. And Rams going to be looking for revenge going to San Francisco. And then you have the rematch of that Monday night game where San Francisco probably should have won or at least tied against Seattle. They close out the season there. So you have the Niners with some big spots on deck, and you get an Atlanta team that, look, they're going nowhere. They're 4-9. They're not making the playoffs. So maybe this is another one kind of like that Jets-Baltimore that we talked about, where it's like, okay, let's get through this and not get anybody hurt, so we have all hands on deck. And San Francisco, really, if you look at them, what's been impressive about them is that they've had to deal with injuries a lot of the season. You recall they had a few games that they were still winning when they had both their tackles out. They had McGlinchey and Joe Staley out and were still able to win. But now you're starting to see maybe some injuries pile up again. Marquise Goodwin got put on IR. Dee Ford may not go on Sunday. That takes a pass rusher away. Dante Pettis, questionable. So you're starting to see that. And I think the 49ers, look, they want to stay as healthy as possible. And this is a big number at 11 here. So I'm likely going to be on the Falcons side, at least small.
Yeah, I'm going to take Atlanta here. And I like Atlanta from a contest context as well. And you know, this is something that I kind of looked at, and I isolated this with regards to the Saints game last week. San Francisco is currently outscoring teams. They're not the suffocating elite defense that we saw earlier on in the year. That defense is getting tired. They had their bye in week 4. It's been a long time since they had a week off. Now they're coming off the back-to-back games on the road. You know, the physical game at Baltimore, then that shootout game against New Orleans, excuse me. San Francisco's defense has some issues right now. They're scoring points. They're outscoring teams enough to win, but their defense has some problems. Atlanta's defense is not good, but their offense can move the football. They've got weapons. They're able to march up and down the field, put some points up on the board. I don't think San Francisco gets a whole lot of stops here. And if their offense isn't motivated, if they're not fully focused on this game, Atlanta, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to win the game. I don't think that that's going to be the case. But this feels like one of those too close for comfort types of games for San Francisco. If they blow out Atlanta, if they overcome the spot, so be it. Kudos to them. Full marks for that. I'll pay to see it, though. I'm going to take Atlanta, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a solid spot where a favorite that it almost looks too easy for them. Maybe doesn't have the AF or does enough to get the win, but gets through it and just moves on.
And, of course, you know, San Francisco with the Rams and Seattle to finish out the season. So maybe this kind of falls into that Baltimore mold a little bit, too, where you've got, you know, kind of what looks like a flat spot type of game, two division games left to finish out the season. You're playing for home field. You know, Baltimore's already won the division. San Francisco still has to take care of that part of it, but kind of fits that same Thursday night mold. So I guess we'll see if those two spots wind up coming through for us here in week 15. Wes, with a few minutes left on the segment here, I do want to ask you about this. We haven't talked a whole lot of college basketball yet. I think it's a pretty good time to talk about the Big Ten, because the Big Ten going through some conference games here again now, because they added some of those conference matchups to the season schedule. Been some interesting developments here in the Big Ten as of late.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they're ranked number one in terms of a conference in college basketball, and I think rightfully so. They did win the challenge with the ACC at 8-6. And I guess one of the big stories has been that Michigan State has been off to a little bit of a struggle here. 1-0 in the league, getting that win over Rutgers, but already have 3 losses in December. Now, 2 of those losses were to Duke and Kentucky. And then they did lose in Maui to Virginia Tech, and they didn't really look good in Maui either, even though they ended up going 2-1. They didn't look great against Georgia. They got off to a big lead, let them back in the game. Never really put the boots to UCLA either. But with Michigan State, you're always looking at the fact that, okay, we've kind of seen this before. They drop a couple games early in the season, but it's like, wake us in February. And then all of a sudden, they win 10 in a row in the league between January and February. So not really willing to say that they're not the favorite anymore, but they're going to be challenged this year. I really thought Maryland was going to be their chief challenger. I still do. Maryland got that loss last night at Penn State, and Penn State's one of those improved teams this year. We always know that Penn State knocks off one or two big boys in league play at the Bryce Jordan Center, but they did so last night. I think this is very much an improved team. They've got one of the best players in the conference in Lamar Stevens. Ohio State and Michigan, I think, were picked in the top four, but both of them, I think especially Ohio State, looks a lot better than I think that they were given credit for. Ohio State's one of the best defenses, probably. And I haven't watched all 350-plus teams, but other than Louisville, the best defensive team I've seen in college basketball is Ohio State. And you saw what they did to North Carolina, who usually will go up-tempo and have a lot of offensive talent. They were able to kind of shut them down. Purdue, I still think, is solid. Purdue is having to win in different ways, though, because they don't really have shooters, and they don't have a guy like Carson Edwards who Matt Painter can give the freedom to say, okay, you can play one-on-one here and go create your own shot. Purdue has to really buckle down on defense and play a slower tempo. They're 345th in tempo this year, so that's what Purdue is going to do. They're going to kind of get back to being Purdue basketball, defense first, run a little bit more half-court motion offense instead of spreading the floor and shooting threes, because they don't really have the shooters, I think, to make that happen this year. And then kind of in the middle of the league, Indiana, I do think, even though they played a soft schedule, and I know they got beat at Wisconsin and all the IU fans were like, oh, well, you shouldn't have played all these home games. Well, you kind of had a young team and you wanted to get some confidence. And they did beat a good, solid Florida State team at home. And then last night, and if you didn't watch the game, what was a rock fight? Wasn't a very pretty game between Indiana and UConn. A lot of turnovers, especially on the UConn side. But nevertheless, Indiana gets a win away from home on a neutral site at the Jimmy V Classic. They're 9-1. This is an improved team. And I think even some of the real bottom feeders in the past, Rutgers has been improved this year at 6-3. They lost to Michigan State, but they were in that game until the final couple minutes. So you've got a league here this year that it's probably too early to speculate where these teams are going to be come NCAA tournament time. But you got to think 8-9 teams at least out of this league are going to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I was trying to look it up here. I mean, I can't remember for the life of me the last time Rutgers was favored over Wisconsin in college basketball, or really any sport for that matter. And they actually are tonight. Now, of course, that line moving down from 1.5 to 1. So maybe Wisconsin winds up going off as the favorite in that game. We'll see if that line keeps moving. But still, I mean, that just kind of speaks to how improved Rutgers is, maybe speaks to how Wisconsin's fallen off a little bit too. But the Big Ten here has been really interesting. Some very nice non-conference wins. I mean, we all saw what Michigan did in Atlantis. They're playing very well. Then, of course, they had that really ugly game against Louisville. Michigan State, not one that you worry about at all. Chris Holtmann doing great work for Ohio State. Purdue with that win over Virginia was pretty interesting, especially the manner in which they did that. So this conference, I mean, it is the best one in college basketball. And, you know, I was kind of curious to see how things would work out for them playing the early conference games for the second year in a row, how it would factor into their non-conference success. And, you know what, so far, maybe it almost battle tests these teams a little bit more. Maybe something to factor into the equation once we get to March.
Yeah, and it seems like you saw the ACC follow suit a little bit, because a lot of them open with conference games. Now, I think a lot of that is due to the fact that they now have this ACC network property owned and operated also by partially by ESPN. So you want programming, and you're like, okay, we're going to put these games on, but you got to get the subscribe and add the ACC network to your cable or your satellite package. So you kind of saw the ACC do it. And I think some of it is a little bit by necessity, because you have so many teams now in these leagues. Even the Mountain West out here started conference play in December, and that's only a 10-11 team league. So they don't have to maybe do it as much by necessity, but you are starting to see more conference games in December. And at first I didn't like it because I usually like conference play. Okay, after the new year, now let's get started and let's get serious with these conference games. But it does break up a little bit of the monotony of the schedule, because you look at this week especially, even though there have been some solid games and there were some good games last night, this is finals week at most colleges and universities across the country. So you're not getting like the real super-sized cards really on the board here. So you're getting kind of spot games on different nights.
Wes Reynolds, who's working in fine on VSiN as well as in that Point Spread weekly newsletter. Wes, when can people check you out over there on VSiN?
Okay, tomorrow and Friday, Thursday and Friday, I'll be on from 8 to 10 Pacific. And then Saturday and Sunday, we go from 2 to 6 Pacific Saturday afternoon, 3 to 7 Pacific on Sunday afternoon. And then for Monday night, during Monday Night Football, 6 to 10 Pacific.
Oh, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter as well, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, pal. You got it. Good luck, everyone.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds again, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. You can find him on VSiN and also in that Point Spread weekly newsletter. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. We'll talk about bowl season. We'll talk about some of the intriguing matchups. Also take a look at some of the Week 15 NFL games that we haven't gotten to on our previous segments here. And, of course, our usual two segments on Friday, my Westgate Super Contest selection segment, and then Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.